Hi, this is Neil Stavem. Thanks for checking out the podcast for Connecting Faith. You can hear the show each Monday through Thursday at noon Central. And remember, there are even more shows available on our website, myfaithradio.com.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to the program. Thanks so much for tuning in. I'm Neil Stavem. Ryan Thomas there at the controls. And Grace answering the phones and looking forward to a good hour today, Ryan. You remember it was about 6 months ago or so when we had Steve Pfeiffer on the show?
I do. He had some very amusing and very touching stories. It was sort of an emotional roller coaster, actually.
Well, you're sort of an emotional person anyway, I see, so... I was detached and didn't know. Steve was available to come back on with us, so I thought we would just make that invitation and bring Steve back. Let me just introduce our guest to you today. Steven Pfeiffer and his wife agreed to be dorm parents at a school in Kenya for a year. This was a number of years ago to escape their grief over the death of their infant son. But a one-year experiment prompted a personal and family pilgrimage that transformed a seemingly ordinary middle-aged American man, husband and father, into perhaps the most unlikely international influential hero you've never heard of. That's what the book describes him as. So, and I think a lot of us still haven't heard of Steve Pfeiffer, but we're welcoming you back to Connecting Faith anyway. Steve, how are you today?
You know, Neil, I believe that he actually said farewell to us for a moment here. I believe he's gone from the line.
That was...
But I'm sure it's nothing you said, necessarily.
So we'll have Grace make that reconnection, apparently.
Yeah, but perhaps a great opportunity to talk about Angel Tree.
True.
As we intended to do at the close of the show.
We were going to do that at the... Well, I think we still will do that at the close, but we are going to tell you more about the Angel Tree. It's the partnership that we've got going on this month there at Faith Radio. I'm excited to say that we are... 270-plus children have already been taken care of through that, and we're glad for that.
Yes.
And there's opportunity. Yes. You can get details on our website at myfaithradio.com. It's myfaithradio.com. Let's bring in Steve, shall we? We were talking about Steve, and it was an amazing introduction, Steve. I'm sorry that you weren't there to hear it.
Well, I heard the roller coaster part, and then the phone went dead, and I thought, that sounds right.
Yeah. Okay. So, well, it was we've had the appropriate amount of emotion, I think, already developed for the show, but looking forward to chatting. We're just saying that you. You had an adventure in Kenya. In fact, now I know you're spending a little time in Florida at the moment. You're in your family, but served for a while with the Rift Valley Academy in Kajabi, Kenya, and written an amazing book called A Dream So Big. The subtitle is Our Unlikely Journey to End the Tears of Hunger. It's from Zondervan, and it's recommended reading. In fact, I'm sorry to say, Steve, that I have passed my copy around to all my family. So instead of them all buying individual ones, so I'm not really helping in that way, I guess. But but we have really enjoyed the story. So you doing well in the family?
We are. We're really quite a transition, and it's been good. We've had some health issues that made it kind of important to be back in the States for a while, but. My little boy got up at 6 o'clock on Sunday morning so he could swim before we went to church, and kind of an indication of how he's taken to Florida.
He's adjusting okay. Huh? So, in the promo material for the book from Zondervan, they talked about your 1 year experiment that turned into this amazing thing. It says transformed a seemingly ordinary middle aged American man, husband, and father into perhaps the most unlikely internationally influential hero you've never heard of. So are you still in that category of the unlikely international influential hero?
Well, I never was a hero. I think unlikely kind of tags it, though.
Yeah.
I admire people that hear the call to the mission field. I was surrounded by missionaries that were just had such a heart for Africa and heart for the lost, and I wish I'd been one of those people. I think the expression they use in corporate America is they grew into the position, and I think that the Lord brought me along, but I am the poster child for him being strong in my weakness, because I sure didn't want to go to Africa.
Well, you were an IT guy, or computer salesperson, right? Business person?
I was in charge of consulting for Oracle Corporation, which is a big software company. Yeah. So all I did was yell at smart people. That was my job.
Okay. Well, in your as you've recounted some of the adventures in A Dream So Big, I mean, you got to be a dorm parent of what, the seventh and eighth grade boys, right? Mm-hmm. That sounds like missionary duty, no matter where you do that, I guess. But you were doing doing driver's training instruction and teaching eighth grade literature and all these. I mean, and what I think at one point you were doing the finances for the Rift Valley Academy too, right? So,
I worked in the business office for a season. I did. I could say I was one of those guys that they would throw me a job and then they would go, well, this one's not working. Let's try this. Well, hey, good effort. Let's try something else. And fortunately, they threw me at college counseling and that one stuck, and that was a joy. I was just had some communication with a Kenyan former student, and he went to Bucknell in Pennsylvania, and he was the first student ever to give the graduation commencement at Bucknell. So
from Rift Valley, right?
Or from, right.
Yeah.
But they've never had a student give the commencement speech before.
Wow.
So it was really kind of like just proud of seeing some of the students that you worked with and what they've accomplished and where they've gone and what they've done. So really a wonderful experience.
Say a word about Rift Valley Academy for those that don't know. It's a missionary school in the kind of in the heart of Africa, isn't it?
That's right. Probably the only school that has baboons on the campus. It's in over 100 years old.
Now, you're not talking about the eighth grade boys here, are you? No. You're, okay.
No, that would be very rude to the baboons.
Sure.
No, it's 108 years old, and it's in a pretty remote area of Africa, and 71 different denominations were represented. So in a way, it's really healthy. Some of the little things that divide us in the United States, people weren't even aware of what you were. As long as you're a Christian and you're paddling forward, it was good. And so really unique, amazing place. My daughter, when she was little, her favorite food was fajitas. But what she liked is ostrich fajitas, and instead of wrapping it in a tortilla, we had a lot of Korean kids in our dorm because Korea sends more people per capita to the mission field than any other country. So instead of wrapping it in a tortilla, she'd like to wrap it in seaweed. I remember telling her one day, I'm not sure you can get more multicultural than an ostrich fajita wrapped in seaweed. I mean, I think you cover almost everything you can then.
That does feel, pretty. You were, you and your family, you were just a middle-aged white guy from Texas. This was somewhat of a culture shock, I imagine. Just maybe review the story a little bit on what maybe you first experienced when you got to Rift Valley and how you got there in the first place.
Well, we were just going along in life. We had a nice life. We had a great church. And we lost a child. And after he passed away, we were just trying to hear what happens next? And in a quiet time, I felt like the Lord said, make your wife's dream come true. And her dream was, since she was 6 years old, to be a missionary in Africa. So we volunteered for a year at Rafaeli Academy, and that ended up being 14 years. And I mean, when we got our training and they were telling us about missionary kids, they were saying, oh, they've got all these weird ways they express themselves, and they're just very different. And the first day of school, they had me teaching driver's ed, which was funny because I wasn't legally allowed to drive in Africa yet. I was teaching driver's ed. But they would have toilet paper rolls on the teacher's desk. And somebody said, may I have one of the rolls? And I don't think you've ever seen anybody more relieved in your life than me when he blew his nose. I had no idea what they might do. So turned out missionary kids are just wonderful kids. I mean, they're kids like every other kids, but they were very welcoming to somebody that was certainly not in the mold of a missionary. And so we really found a home there and a peace. And we ended up staying for a long time. And we're not closing the door to go back, but at this point, it's for health reasons, it's just better for our family to be in the States. But it's an amazing place. It's just an amazing place.
It captures your heart, and Steve has written about it in the book called A Dream So Big, Our Unlikely Journey to End the Tears of Hunger. And we're going to get into the story more in just a moment, because there is still some work that's being done. Steve had pioneered that, and he and his family, and we'll hear a little bit more about that coming up as we talk with Steve Pfeiffer, who has served for 14 years at Rift Valley Academy in Kajabi, Kenya, written about it in the book called A Dream So Big. From Zondervan, more in a moment.
Faith Radio's mission is to lead people to Christ and nurture you in your spiritual growth through Christ-centered media. We recently connected online with David from Bangladesh.
I'm so glad to have been introduced to MyFaithRadio.com. I like to listen to Faith Radio, which I get through this address online. It's my wish that God will expand His ministry everywhere in the world.
MyFaithRadio.com crosses borders and even oceans. Log on today at MyFaithRadio.com and join the conversation helping to spread the message of Faith Radio.
How would you describe Faith Radio?
It's inspiring.
It really challenges me.
It gives me that nudge I need in the right direction.
We'd be honored to hear why you'd listen and why you'd recommend Faith Radio to friends and loved ones. It's simple to share your story. Just call our Faith Line and leave a message with your story. The number is 877-93-FAITH. That's 877-93-FAITH. Then press 2 for the Faith Line. And thank you for sharing your story on the Faith Radio Faith Line.
We're at 17 past the hour and talking today with Steve Pfeiffer, who served for a number of years at Rift Valley Academy. He and his family were there. In fact, added to his family while there. We'll get into that story a little bit. Among his assignments, they're serving as director of college guidance for Rift Valley Academy. It's a missionary school in Kajabi, Kenya. And he, while there, established a rural food program that provides lunches and also is a computer training center. And we're going to hear a little bit more about that. But Steve, just a little bit about, and the book, by the way, A Dream So Big, recommended reading. Steve, when you were there, you know, it is an amazing place, but it must have been at some point just kind of overwhelming to consider the poverty that you were surrounded by day in and day out. Talk a little bit about how that, the contrast and, you know, things that maybe you took for granted, but you don't anymore.
Yeah, I was a suburban kid and never been hungry and never really been around hunger. And I can still remember the first or second day, a national worker asked me for a bag of sugar. And she said, I have it, 7 people coming for dinner, and we don't have any food in the house at all. And I thought, well, that's weird. And then I thought, well, you don't have power, so you don't have a refrigerator. And so it would make sense that you don't keep a lot of things around the house. And then when I found out most people make $1 a day, it's hard to stretch that to have a lot of extra things around. But the turning point for me was there was a drought going on, and we decided to give some food to a local school. And we were visiting the school, and all the kids were lying on the ground. And when I asked one of the teachers why, she said, it's Thursday. They haven't eaten since Monday, and when they sit up straight, they faint. And that was a turning point. That was a week before we were scheduled to go back permanently to America. And I kind of knew at that point that he would call us back. And we did some research, and I think that the clarity we had from the Lord was that we didn't want to react to a problem. We wanted to see how he would choose to help solve the problem. And the biggest cause of poverty is not knowing Jesus, and the second biggest cause of poverty is not being educated. So we thought if we brought food to a school, because the dropout rate was 50%, and had them prepare it for kids, what would it do? And we started with one school. We could feed a kid for a month for $1. So we had a school, 300, and we had $300. I mean, it was not not kind of hard to try it for a month and hope some other money would come in. And at the end of the term, the headmaster said, nobody dropped out. We usually have half the students drop out. Nobody dropped out, and another 20 kids added the school. Second term, one kid dropped out, but another 18 or 20 kids joined the school. Third term, nobody dropped out. And he came to me and he said, we have to take a national exam every year comparing us to all the other schools in Kenya, and we have been at the bottom of our school zone for the last 10 years. And he handed me this sheet of paper, and he just started weeping. And they were ranked first. The only difference was the kids got maize and beans for lunch every day. That was the only difference, the only change in the school. So I wish I could say I was one of those visionary guys that thought, you know, at some point we'll have 20,000 kids and 34 schools. I just never thought it would take off, but it resonated with people, and it grew and grew. And the difference in kids, in just like their energy level, before you could almost see, like, if you see a pro athlete a little after his time that's still playing and trying to conserve his strength before he goes back in the huddle, that's how these kids were. And once they were eating regularly, they were like little kids. They were running around and yelling and playing, and it was just exciting to see. But obviously, paid off in the classroom too.
You just you sent back notes, right? Just letters to the families and churches that were kind of supporting you that while you were there, right? And just said, here, it's something I want to do. And you, as I recall, you were saying, you know, we were going to set up a big structure. You kind of handle it mostly yourself, right?
Yeah, I mean, we just didn't. It's just wonderful when God takes hold of something and he builds the house. I mean, people have come to me that are old friends and said, you know, I'm happy all this stuff happened for you, but I still can't believe it's you. I wasn't the guy. He made it happen. And it kind of grew organically. We got extra money in for the third term, and so I thought, what should we do with this? And that day somebody came to our house and said, we have a school, would you consider adding us? And we'd just gotten more money in, so I thought, well, yeah, let's try another one. And finally we started working with a couple local pastors and helped them help us pick the schools that we should do. So it was pastors from the community that were deciding which schools needed it the most. And what was great about that was I felt like the Lord pretty early on led me to not take the place of a Kenyan if I could help it. So I started bringing the pastors with me, and they would preach at lunch. The schools were fine with that. And my Swahili was such that they would hear Jesus a lot, but they wouldn't hear much more. So they had pastors speaking in their language, and all I would say is this food was brought by Christians in America that love you and love Jesus. And then the pastors would just share about Jesus' love, and the response was just amazing. We got to pray with kids every single week.
Just you'd buy food locally, right? Just beans and rice?
That's right.
Or beans and the corn, right?
No,
or maize.
Beans and maize. And we got the recipe from World Health. It was 3/4 maize, 1/4 beans, and it really was pretty nutritious and really filling. I've eaten a lot of it. I can't say that I long to eat it yet. I'm having a nice break from beans and maize, but the kids loved it, and it was powerful. Food is powerful. I wish I could have invented something cool that would have fixed problems instead of if you feed a hungry kid, they do better.
Yeah. It was just something that I remember you kind of talk about in the book that you just, in fact, I think it was a mountain hike with one of your sons on New Year's, right? Kind of a New Year's resolution that you weren't going to let the poverty surrounding you just kind of fade into the background, right?
Well, I didn't want to make peace with it, and it's easy to. Anybody that works at a school knows how busy you get at a school, and there are all sorts of needs at the school. So it would be easy to turn away, and I felt like the Lord said, just don't make peace with it. And it resonated with our supporters. I mean, it's amazing the credit I get for the little I did, but our supporters were the people that, I remember so many different terms where we were going to have to go to 3 schools and say, we don't have enough money for this term. We're just going to have to back you out of the program. And the last day, the money would show up. One time I got notice that some stock I had that I didn't even know I had I'd gotten a dividend, which was like $1.25, but I thought, I don't need this, and I could sell it and put it into the program. I mean, there was just always something where God just provided in a way that we knew it was Him.
You've got a website set up there. It's what, KenyaKidsCan.org, right?
Yes, sir. And we got an amazing guy in April as we started feeling like we needed to take a break. A guy from Rift Valley came to me, Mark Dubemeyer, and said, would you consider letting us work alongside you? And I told him what we were planning. And he's a brilliant guy. He's a math teacher, and his wife is a math teacher. And they've adopted several African children. And so we had this connection. We went down to the school, and he looked at how we were doing the food, and he said, have you considered this? I said, no. And then he started looking at the computer. I don't want to get ahead of the story, but he looked at the computer stuff, and he said, have you considered doing this? And I said, no. How about this? He said, no. And I finally said, it's good to have a teacher doing this, because I'm not a teacher, and he is. So he's taken it more places I ever could have.
Mm. We'll talk more. We'll get the story just on the other side of this short little break, and invite you to stay tuned as we talk to Steve Pfeiffer. Steve and his family served. Steve served as the director of college guidance for Rift Valley Academy for a number of years in Kajabi, Kenya, And he and his family have established a program feeding children, school kids, and there's also a computer side of it as well. KenyaKidsCan.org is the website. More with Steve Pfeiffer. We're talking about his book, A Dream So Big, coming up here in a moment. To have a big introduction to reintroduce our guest today, who feels the pressure to to rise to the level. Steve Pfeiffer is my guest today. He's written about their adventures in Africa in the book called A Dream So Big, and it is a fascinating story of a businessman, a suburban businessman, active in his church, but not thinking about being a missionary, but ended up going to Kenya. They start out as dorm parents at the Rift Valley Academy in Kajabi, Kenya. Did that for a year, came back briefly, and I don't think we have time to tell the story about the Las Vegas trip, but ended up going back, and in that process started reaching out to schools in the community. But Steve, maybe just to review a little bit about, getting... you tell several stories about sort of getting adjusted to Africa time, that you're back in the States, and I'm just wondering have you gotten back into the faster pace, or have you been able to slow down life a little bit?
Well, I have seventh grade twins, so I don't care where you are in the world, the pace never slows down with seventh grade twins. But it's been, I think I appreciate America like maybe I took it for granted before, for us, having evenings where it's just our family rather than maybe 15 to 20 kids being over for 3 hours working on college applications or working on classes or just wanting to hang out, it's been a real sweet time for our family to just be the four, or tomorrow the five, and Friday the seven of us. I think that America, where the individual family is so important, and in Kenya the community is so important, and they're both good, but it's been a sweet time for our family when we can just be us. And so we're enjoying America. If you saw me, you would say, gosh, Steve, you've enjoyed it too much, because American food just calls out to me.
Really? Yeah. It doesn't taste anything like maize and beans, apparently. So.
Well, I could still remember, like, I would work with the Maasai, and they would make a point of saying, we don't have any honorary Maasai that are white except you, and to celebrate this, we want you to drink from the gourd. And I knew that meant Tendeo goat milk and cow blood. And the fact that at the end I took a swig and go, this isn't so bad, was a great moment. But to be in the States for 5 months and go, gosh, I'm not missing cow blood at all.
Yeah.
It's like
welcome to settled stomachs, perhaps. So you mentioned a couple of 7-year-old twins. Those were added to your family in Kenya. Tell a little bit about the story of adopting. I mean, as that wasn't something that you probably went over to Kenya thinking you were going to be doing.
Well, actually, my wife is probably like a lot of wives, kind of ahead of the curve. This may be the only time in almost 29 years of marriage where fairly early on in Kenya, I felt like maybe we were supposed to adopt. But whenever I would mention it to Nancy, she would just start weeping. The wound was still so tender in her. But when we went back after our year in furlough, and I mentioned again, she kind of got excited about it. And one of our kids said, we can't replace our brother. We don't want to. I said, well, let's just meet these twins we heard about. They were 4 months old. They had been abandoned. They had been left for the animals to get them. I said, let's just meet them. We kind of all need to be on the same page and hearing the Lord on this. And we went there, and the reticent son picked up my daughter and said, I'm good. Can we take her home now? And so it was a pretty natural thing to bring them home. And I wouldn't be honest if I didn't say the happiest day of my life was when they were toilet trained. Anybody that's had twins understands what I'm saying, but it's, oh gosh. So, but it's been, I'll still remember the first time we brought them back to the States. We were in Texas, and we went to hardware store. And so it was just Ben and Kate and I, and they were three at the time. And this guy in bib overalls looks at them, and he looks at me, and he looks at them, and he looks at me, and he comes walking over. And I get my hand on a wrench. If he says something mean to my kids, I'm going to smack the guy down. I mean, I am ready. And he looks at them, he goes, ain't them cute? I got kids, but they ain't cute. Them are cute. And I said, well, thank you, sir. I think there's a sale on wrenches here. But it's been a wonderful thing to have them. And I've had three boys, so to have a daughter has been extra special. My older brother had three sons, and he always talked about the last son. He didn't care what it was. It was going to wear a dress. Pfeiffer men just have sons. And yeah. So to have a daughter has been really a special thing. I don't think there's an element of your heart that you're not aware of until you have a daughter. There's just father-daughter thing is really special.
I'm thinking your nephew is probably happy that he can give his dresses to you anyways. tell me a little bit about the solar-powered computer training center that developed. You were feeding, in fact, we should mention for those, you'll want to read the story, A Dream So Big, but it was, you launched this food program in the schools, and some 20,000 plus Kenyan school children getting fed per day, is that right? Or is it more than that, or is it less than that? Or is it...
No, it's 20,300. I think that's where it's at right now.
You actually got awarded the CNN Heroes Award for championing children back in 2007, and you know, got to wear a tux and dress up and you know, speak to a bunch of people that had never probably seen anything of Kenya. So, but you got involved in doing some computer training as well. Talk about that.
Well, I was at a school, and the headmaster said, my goal is to have one book for every four children, because I have one book for every 14 children now. And there was no power, water, or cement floors at the school. And I just left kind of depressed, just thinking, it's kind of a meager education. And I was driving back to RVA, and Rift Valley Academy, and I got pulled over because the presidential caravan went by, and you had to turn off your car and stand at attention. He went by in a new Mercedes, which I'm fine with. It's a big country. You ought to have a good car. But the next 18 government cars were all Mercedes. And it just kind of hit me. Some of the aid doesn't get to these kids. It's going for politician cars and politician stuff. And I just got angry, and a good missionary would have prayed the way home. I hit my hand on the steering wheel. I trust that in that, my little tantrum, that I call out to the Lord. But by the end of it, I kind of felt I had an idea of leapfrogging the schools and putting a computer center in. So I went to Walter, a guy in our mission. I know cars have four wheels, and that's the extent of my mechanical ability. And I said, hey, Walter, how would you do a solar computer center? He said, give me a couple days. Calls me in a couple days, and he said, We'll get an old shipping container. We'll gut it. We'll bring it on site. We'll put it in a classroom and put the solar in. So we could get those for, and they're like solid steel. They're a couple inches thick, hard for thieves to break in, for like $700. And gut them and put solar on and have a classroom by the school. And so we got a donation for it, and it just took off. I mean, I'll never forget a Maasai kid coming up to me, lived in a mud hut his whole life, never owned a pair of shoes. He goes, I got a problem. I got 20 macros in the spreadsheet, but when I added the 21st macro, it didn't work anymore. What should I do? I said, you know what I did before I came to Kenya? He goes, no. I had 9,000 people working for me, computer consultants. And if I put two macros in a spreadsheet, it doesn't work. Get out of here. And it was, they were just catching it fast. I went into a school one day, and they were going to have a computer exam. And they said, you must take the exam with us. And I said, no. And they said, you fear us. I said, I don't fear you. I'll take your exam. So guess who got the lowest grade in the exam? So one of the kids said, you're just being nice to us. And I said, no, I wish I was like, I wanted to crush you. You're just better than me.
They have opportunity. A given opportunity can succeed. I think that's probably what you've discovered, right? That they, you know, food and education can really make a transformation.
Yeah, and if people see an opportunity, most people run after it. And that's so exciting to see. Lots of kids got good jobs because they were really skilled on Word and Access and Excel. And Access is a programming language. I'm an ex-Oracle guy, so I don't think it's a very good programming language, but it's a programming language. So I actually had graduates that are out programming. They're doing database programming and making, for Kenya, pretty good money. And also just kind of like feeling like I'm not going to be left behind. I got hope that I can fit into a modern world. So really exciting. And the guy that took over for me is an educator. And he sees uses for these centers and for the teaching that this dumb, uneducator guy never even thought of. I mean, he asked me 20 questions, and I kept saying, never thought of that. That's a good one. Never thought of that. And so he's gone into the schools and said, you can use this for this class and show them how to use it. And so it's starting to incorporate where before we were just teaching Typing Tutor and Microsoft Office, where he's using it as a tool for math and English, and it's just amazing. He's just taken it to a level I never could have.
And can we find out about the computers through the Kenya Kids Can as well?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and his name is Mark Dubmeyer, and you'll love what he's doing. He's just an amazing guy. I mean, the skill set to start something and the skill set to grow something are different skills. And he was God's man to just bring it to a different level. And we'd love to grow it more. We would love for people to get a vision for this, because for not a lot of money, we can make a difference. And when kids get educated and learn technology and are fed, and they know the reason that happened was because American Christians loved them and Jesus loves them, that's a lot of impact. Lots of kids turn to the Lord, and lots of kids feel a real gratitude to America because it was American Christians that made it happen. I think that's those are eternal things that are just really, really exciting.
Talking to Steve Pfeiffer about what God's doing in Africa, and through feeding, through education, KenyaKidsCan.org is the website. We're going to talk more with Steve in just a moment. He's written a great book. It's from Zondervan's called A Dream So Big, Our Unlikely Journey to End Tears of Hunger. And that's just, you won't be able to put it down. Great reading. We'll talk more with Steve in just a moment.
Hi, this is Dick Whitworth, General Manager of Faith Radio.
And I'm Neil Stavem, Program Director for the Faith Radio Network.
The Bible says it's a good thing to give thanks unto the Lord and to sing praises unto His name. And while we are certainly giving thanks to the Lord, we also want to say thanks to you for your support during Winter Share.
During the season of giving, your generosity to Faith Radio is so encouraging. And we just want to wish you a very Merry Christmas and God's richest blessing on you and your family in the year to come. Thank you for supporting Faith Radio.
For unto us a child is born, unto us a son is given. Hello, I'm Chuck Swindoll. On behalf of my wife Cynthia and all of us at Insight for Living, warmest Christmas greetings to each one of you. May the season be filled with joy as you celebrate Jesus, the newborn.
Not George Strait. If it was George Strait, Steve would be happier. Or if we had something by Diana Ross and the Supremes, or what else is was? Yeah, there was. I can't remember the other ones, but there was. You still kind of a country boy at heart.
Well, actually, every time you have a break and you're playing the music, I go, "Gosh, I wish this guy would let the song finish." I love your music.
Just. You're not that interesting to hear yourself talk, apparently. Is that what you're saying?
So, well, yeah. I wouldn't say that exactly right.
Last time,
I like all kind of music. Okay. And I, one of the things I got to do in Kenya was I was the DJ. And I actually had a CD I found at a used CD place, which was a woman who yodeled the 1812 Overture. And they have a big Pinewood Derby event every year at Rafael Academy, and I DJed that for over a decade. And I heard from more people since we'd left saying nobody had the 1812 yodeler. What's going on? So it's good to be remembered for something.
Sure, sure. How did your kids adjust to living and going to school at Rift Valley? I mean, they're with the international students. You're talking about, I think, your daughter having the ostrich fajita wrapped in seaweed. But, I mean, it was they were certainly exposed to the vast variety of what God has to offer in creation.
Well, my oldest son, where we lived in Texas, it was a nice area, and it was not a very diverse area. My oldest son was in fifth grade when he went to Africa, and when he graduated, he went to Wake Forest, and he graduated from Wake Forest and married a woman he met the first week of college, 2 weeks after he graduated. Now, she's an absolutely awesome person, and I wouldn't want to define her by this, but she also happens to be African-American. And I'm not sure that would have happened if we hadn't gone to Africa. Now, I'm like every father-in-law who's insanely proud of his daughter-in-law, but she's finishing her doctorate in clinical psychology at University of Virginia right now. And a brilliant woman, sweet woman. And she started writing to me when they first started dating. And I thought, oh, good. He picked a smart one. I mean, she was just so eloquent. Then I met her and thought, she could have been the stupidest person in the world, and he wouldn't have known. She's pretty cute, too. But I think that's an example of the change that you go through when you're all of a sudden not the majority, and you look at things with new eyes. And my second son, who's a senior at University of Richmond, Where he's comfortable hanging out is with the international kids. That's how he self-identifies. And I mean, he has friends from the whole spectrum, but he's more global than I think he would have been if we stayed in Texas.
Sure.
Nothing against Texas.
No.
Love Texas.
What would you offer maybe as advice for someone listening right now who had maybe decided that they would be a missionary supporter, but not a missionary? I mean, you didn't go to all the proper sort of missionary training schools, all those kinds of things. What would you say to someone that's maybe has an opportunity or a prompting?
Well, I'd say you can trust God. The scripture that means more to me than any scripture for the last 10 years is, it still makes me laugh, and I'm not being irreverent to our Lord, but he goes to one of the apostles and says, hey, go down to the water, grab a fish, and get money out of its mouth. Now, why did he do that? I mean, couldn't he just go, hey, check your pocket. Hey, a 50, thanks, Jesus.
Yeah.
He did it because he wanted to show that he could do it and his ways weren't our ways. And if we trusted him, he'd make a way for us. And if you're hearing the Lord, you can trust him. It won't always be easy. I remember my boss having a new teacher in his office, and she was weeping, and she said, I must be the worst teacher Rift Valley Academy's ever had. And my boss said, oh, no, that was Pfeiffer in eighth grade English. it certainly wasn't always a wonder, but God used it all, and God will use you. The thing that we want to wait for is, when I'm mature, when I'm wealthy, when I have better connections, and it's all kind of a Western lie. And probably a universal lie. All the Lord's waiting for is us to be available, so he'll get the glory when he's strong in our weakness. And if you got to wait until you have it all together, you're going to wait a long time. So much better when it's so fun to be with my old friends when they just start laughing. I had an old friend in my office, and I've got my college counseling awards that cover a wall. And he's just laughing. He goes, how could this happen to you? And it's true. It's just God was strong in my weakness, and God will be strong in your weakness too.
The 320 pages of Steve Pfeiffer's weakness recounted in the book, Get Dreams So Big. And it is just, it's a wonderful story. And Steve, I appreciate you just taking a little time to catch up with us again. I'm glad we could make the connection, and I want to wish you and your entire family, blessed Christmas, and for the work that's going on in Kenya, that just continues to grow and expand in ways that you couldn't even dream of.
Well, I'm grateful for the time again. It's fun to get caught up, and blessings to you. We're going to be the first time all of us together as a family in about 4 years on Friday. So. We're pretty excited.
Oh, indeed. Well, it's good to spend a little time just catching up again. Remember the website, kenyakidscan.org. We'll put a link up on our website as well. But Steve, blessings to you and your family, and thanks for carving out a little time today.
Thanks so much.
All right, and don't bother with any maize and beans for Christmas. Just something else. All right. Steve Pfeiffer joining us today here on Connecting Faith. We've got a couple of minutes left before our program is done, and we're talking about the great work that Steve has helped develop, over 20,000 kids being fed every day. It's just amazing, and the Computer Program Center. But we've been talking this month here on Faith Radio about a pretty amazing outreach as well, Angel Tree. It's a ministry of prison fellowship, and it's a way for volunteers to make connection with kids of incarcerated parents, of which there are 2.7 million in America. And for $12.25, you can help make sure that one child with an incarcerated parent receives a gift and a message of love from their parent and the gospel. And we want to just share a story about one of those examples right now.
Can a mom be a mom in prison? Lisa Brown was found guilty of drug possession charges when her son was 5 and her daughter was 14. She had hit bottom and couldn't imagine any way to stay connected to her children until a group of inmates offered a ray of hope.
They invited me to go up to the chapel to sign up for Angel Tree. I had no idea what that program was, and I was just totally amazed that people cared enough to provide our children with a Christmas.
That was the first time Lisa had been in the prison chapel, and she signed her kids up for Angel Tree.
There was a space on the application where you could write a message to your children, and that message would be delivered to your children with the present.
Was it possible that strangers would deliver her message and Christmas presents to her son and daughter? A few weeks later, Lisa got her answer.
And my son gets on the phone and he says, "Mommy, how did you know what I wanted? Thank you, and I love you forever and ever and always." I just fell apart. That was my message that I had written, was "I love you forever and ever and always." So when he said that back to me, I knew exactly what he was talking about.
Not long after, Lisa gave her life to Christ, faithfully attended Bible study, and promised God that when she got out, she would somehow get involved with Angel Tree. At the Duncanville, Texas Church of Christ, near the end of a 12-step recovery meeting, Lisa got her chance.
At the end of the meeting, one of the guys directing the class stood up and said, "Listen, guys, I need some help. We're going to do this Angel Tree program. This is kind of a last-minute deal." Well, of course, my hand shot straight up. "I'll do it." And he's like, "Let me explain what it is." And I'm like, I shook my head and I said, "You don't need to explain. I know exactly what it is."
God had used Angel Tree in a miraculous way in her life, and Lisa wanted to be part of the same miracle for others.
I looked up and I'm like, "Thank you, God. You answered my prayers." And I became the coordinator at our church and have been doing it ever since.
When given a chance to give back, without hesitation, Lisa says, "I'll do it." What about you? What have you been given? Is this your chance to give back?
Check it out today online, myfaithradio.com, an opportunity for you to give back. Or you can call this toll-free number, 1-855-59-ANGEL. And thank you for your partnership with the Prison Fellowship. Thanks for listening to Connecting Faith.